Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Hello and welcome back to the Tennis Connected Studios for January 17th, 2020. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sami, and we're here this week to preview the Australian Open. Before we begin this week's show, let's introduce our co-host Parsa. How are you, my friend? Long time, no talk.
Yeah, what's going on? Not much. You know, very excited for, the Australian Open coming up, and have been following closely on the ATP Cup. And Adelaide and the other two in Auckland, and yes. It's been a very interesting time, you know, obviously with all the fires and everything, and so yes. There's been a lot more drama surrounding the tennis, not necessarily about the tennis, and hopefully the drama of Down Under for the next 2 weeks is going to provide equal or much healthier drama, I should say, during the event, because it looks to be very exciting. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's interesting, obviously, because we have like this natural disaster that's taken place with these bushfires, and it's decimated a lot of Australia with the fires and the death of all the animals and some of the firefighters and people losing their homes, and everybody's come together. It's got obviously worldwide publicity, all of the athletes and a lot of people, a lot of celebrities around the world have made it a focal point of to donate and to help out and give their time and money to these to this fire so we can finally put it out. And obviously the air quality has been affected, but I believe it's getting better. So I'm getting these updates on Twitter constantly, and I think today it was actually said it was pretty good. So hopefully by Monday or Sunday night, our time, and Monday in Melbourne, the air quality will be much better, especially for the outside courts, because I think push comes to shove, they have three courts with retractable roofs, and those courts, obviously they can put the roof on and, pump up some AC, and obviously it's very bearable. But for the rest of the players that have to, that are, shoved outside and they have to play outside, hopefully for them, it's, more suitable conditions. And it's great to see all of the players getting together and doing something and donating money for aces or just lump sums like Federer, Nadal, and Serena and Djokovic. To be quite honest with you, and I'm not taking a shot at anybody, I really think that they could give a lot more. I mean, we're talking about players that are worth hundreds of millions of dollars, and when they're donating 125 grand or 250 grand, I mean, it's great for me to do that, if I had the money. But I mean, listen, man, if I'm worth $200 million, I mean, I don't know why you can't just throw a couple million bucks. That's just my opinion. I'm not taking any shots at anybody or making it like a dark thing for, as an overall, but I definitely think that a lot of these players, especially like the Federer, Nadal, Serena, Djokovic and Sharapova, can definitely give a lot more than they did. Still great, but I definitely think that a lot more could be given. But anyhow, Parsa, we have landed first major of 2020. It's a new decade, but I don't think much is going to change for now in terms of who's going to win these events for the foreseeable future. Obviously, we've had a few things transpire so far this year. We've had the ATP Cup, which got a lot of pretty good publicity. And then we've had, obviously, like you said, we have Auckland and a couple WTA events in Shenzhen. And, I think there was a really good match today in Adelaide with Andre Rublev, who's coming in really hot, against Felix Auger-Aliassime. He beat him in almost 3 hours. He won last week in Doha as well, too. So watch out for Rublev. For those of you who read my prediction for the year end this year, I put Rublev as around number 10 in the world to finish, and I said that if he's healthy, there's absolutely no reason why this guy shouldn't be top 10. So if he stays healthy, I mean, that killer forehand that he has, and he's, he runs around the court like a firefly, there's no reason in my mind that he won't be a top 10 player. Is there anything that's jumped out to you, Parsa, so far in the new decade in terms of how that will reflect as we move forward to the Australian Open?
And nothing new has really jumped up, other than there's, I don't know, we've been waiting 10 years, literally a decade, for a new crop to sort of make their presence felt. And you're definitely getting that with Medvedev, definitely, you know, knocking down the door, itching to, you know, to make a slam final, and he's made a slam final, but to win one. And, you know, you hear his interview. I don't know if you heard this, Nima, but, you know, basically, he goes, you know, they asked him about his off season, and he says, well, you know, I don't know what everyone else does, but I went away for a week with my wife, and that was great. And then for the last, you know, whatever, 4 or 5 weeks, I get to the club at 8 a.m. and I leave at 8 p.m. And he's like, you know, I don't know what everyone else does, but that's what I do. So I would say, and be safe to say, that he is going to be well conditioned for Australia's heat and for the rest of the year.
Yeah, he played that really good match with Djokovic at the ATP Cup. Djokovic looking in scary form, but I mean, Medvedev, I think he's the one guy, if possible, like you said, I mean, like the guy, I mean, what he's saying, he's been there for 12 hours a day training in his club. I think if he's physically there, off the ground, I think he's the one guy who can really go toe-to-toe with Djokovic right now. I mean, his backhand is top three in the world, in my opinion. He's got a really good serve. His forehand is there right now. And he, I mean, the guy's, and he competes well, right? So, and he's tricky, and he's got all these crafty shots, and he's willing to stay out there. Like, he's not shying away from the pain that it takes to win one of these events, right? And so I think with that put into the equation on a hard court, I mean, I think this guy is right there. You got to put him top three favorite to win the event right there with Djokovic, maybe Rafa as the second, third guy. But I mean, definitely I would love to see Medvedev do something and win a slam. I actually picked him, Parsa, to finish number one this year. And people are like, oh, you're trying to, you know, get a lot of reads and, you know, clickbait and all of this stuff. But I think, to be honest with you, it was, I mean, he's got a lot of points to defend after Wimbledon, but before Wimbledon, doesn't have that many points to defend. So if he can do a lot before then he's got that, you know, the lack of pressure for not having a lot of points in the first half of the year on his plate. And then if he plays like 80%, let's say you made like six finals, right? Let's say he makes three of those finals and he wins two of them. And we're talking about big events, right? Like Canada and Cincy, US Open. What else did he do? Shanghai, I don't know, Moscow, one of whatever. But he was like right there, finals every week. If he can do like 60 to 80% there and do really good in the first half, that, I mean, right there, he could definitely finish number one. I mean, obviously finishing number one last year, it took, you know, Nadal winning two majors, finals in Australia, semis of Wimbledon, right? As well as winning Canada, Rome, and, you know, a couple other events, right? Djokovic won two slams, and he got injured, obviously, at the US Open, so he couldn't really pump it up there to finish number one. Otherwise, I think that he would have. So that's really what it's taken. So we'll see. But I think Medvedev's got a good chance. What do you think about his chances finishing in the top spot this year before we get into the women's draw?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't think it's going to happen. The reason is because, you know, I just don't feel like he's going to have that ability to be consistent at a top level yet. He can play top level matches, but I'm not believing in his top level consistency yet. And I think that's what it takes to be number one. It's a 52 week calendar, and you have to be the best player over the last 52 weeks. So I think it's a little bit different in that, you know, there has to be some sort of consistency. Can he be a future number one? I really believe that's to be true. Is this the year? I don't think these top dogs are ready to go out yet. You know, and I think they're going to be battling each other, and Medvedev is going to have to go through these big time matches back to back to back in order to sort of gain that position, not to mention the younger guys who still believe that he is one of them and so that they can take him out. So I think there's a little bit of trickiness ahead between Nadal and Djokovic. I still think the number one is going to lie between those two guys. You know, we'll see. You know, not to mention Berrettini also, who's looked very strong at the end of last year. And again, another guy, not that he's going to be number one, but he's going to cause a lot of problems. So I think there's a lot of, you know, the parity is actually starting to show itself a little bit, at least with the top eight or so. You know, and, you know, not to mention team, you know, he's a hard court run away from, you know, is it feasible to say that he's going to win Roland Garros and then a hard court run away from, you know, making a semi in Australia, a final in New York, you know, winning a couple of Master Series? It's feasible, and him finishing one. So I think there's a lot of scenarios that could happen. But I think Medvedev is, I would say he's probably like a second or third guy in terms of who I'd put as finishing number one.
You know, it's interesting, Parsa, because I'm not sure if we spoke about this. We haven't done a podcast, I think, since the end of the U.S. Open. But I definitely know that I said it on Twitter. I'm not sure if I said it on our last podcast. But who cares at this point? In the sense of, now, let me finish. Look, Federer's going to be 39 this year, man. Nadal is going to be 34. And Djokovic is going to be 33, right? And Murray is, I mean, on his back. I mean, he's coming back. He pulled out of a couple more events. He's not playing Australia. I don't think he's going to be the biggest factor anymore, but he's still going to be around just because he's so good throughout his career. And then we got Stan, who's still playing some good tennis. But, like, just by default of, you know, nobody defeats age. Age is the ultimate winner. These younger guys are starting to come into the mix, right? I don't think it's necessarily based on their merit, as opposed to the fact that Federer is almost 40 years old, man. You know what I'm saying? Nadal is almost mid-30s, and Djokovic is going to be like 33 in a couple months. Obviously, these guys are going to start to creep in, and, you know, Djokovic is going to lose semis of Miami. Somebody's going to do well. Team is going to come in a little bit. You know, Taylor Fritz is going to win a couple rounds here and there. I don't think it's because... So what I'm trying to say is, remember back in the day, we saw like a Nadal, right? And we were like, well, look, man, this guy is the real, real deal. You know, 17, 18, winning the French, right? Like, this guy is going to do something. You know what I'm saying? Like, Djokovic came up, we're like, this guy is, you know, 2008, he wins the Australian Open, right? This is 2020. So he won his first slam 12, 13 years ago. Right, Federer winning at 2003, he won Wimbledon, that's 17 years ago, and he's 39 now, so around 22, right? So it's, do we really see a guy like that? Do you see Berrettini as this greatest of all time Hall of Famer? I certainly don't. Do you see Taylor Fritz like that? Do you see Francis Tiafoe? Like Medvedev, maybe he wins a few slams. I'm not sure. But do you see what I'm trying to say? I'm trying to say that people talk about, okay, well, the next gen is finally coming. And I'm like, so what? It's about time that they're finally coming. And it's not necessarily based on their overall merit. It's based on the fact that it's just the time because everybody else is getting old. And eventually they're going to fade away based on the law of averages and human beings just aging. Right, just like Serena Williams just won another title, right, for the first time since 2017. What is she? She's like 39 almost. So it's like, is it that exciting? I mean, it is for sure. Like, you can't take anything away from people because not everybody is meant to be a Serena or a Federer or Djokovic or Nadal. But it's, for me, it's not like groundbreaking stuff that these players are doing. It's just based on, you know, just the law of averages and people getting older. Do you have any thoughts on that before we jump into the draw?
Then saying I completely agree with you. Not much. I mean, you're spot on.
So anyhow, let's jump into the women's draw. We have home country favorite Ashleigh Barty trying to win her second major after winning the French last year. I think she's got a pretty workable draw parse as we break it down. But again, that pressure of playing at home is always never easy, right? We know what it's done to Sam Stosur and a lot of the other Aussies throughout the years. We have Madison Keys, who can play some decent ball. But I mean, as we've talked about in previous podcasts, as well as texts between each other, we know that Madison doesn't necessarily have the mental fortitude to really get over the hump and win one of these events. We got Sakari, who's recently changed to Adidas. You know, very feisty player, has that Greek heritage, which is very well embraced down under. Let's see how she does. We got Kvitova, who's a former two-time major winner. Osaka, who is the defending champion. We got Sloane Stephens, former U.S. Open winner. And then we got Kenin, who's a young American, who's 14th seed, who's been playing some good ball. I think we should watch out for her. And then we have Serena Williams, who has a pretty good draw. And is it finally time for her to get over the hump, Parsa? Or does she get to the finals and, you know, then she, you know, maybe loses in straight sets again? We have give another shout out to Caroline Wozniacki, who is retiring after this tournament. Former winner here, could definitely be her last match in the first round against a qualifier. We shall see. We wish her all of the best. Very nice girl. So what are your overall thoughts on this, on the top half, and who are you taking to get through here?
So I think still, I don't think much has changed. I think the same cast of characters will make their way through.
Yes.
You know, I think you've got to talk about Osaka. You have to talk about Serena Williams. You have to talk about Ali Risk even. You know, she's showed a very strong end, or I should say second half of 2019. The Barty party obviously is an obvious choice, but there is that pressure down under. You know, and then the youngcomer, Coco Gauff, you know, drawing Venus again. Yes. I think that's something to be made of. You know, and then you got your pain in the beeps. That would be Kenin, that would be Konta. You know, I think these are really tough outs. Wozniacki, I think, is going to be a tough out. Bencic is going to be a tough out. Bencic is on the other side. Sorry. So, you know, who do I have? I'm still going to go with Serena Williams. I think she's past the losing of the final. I think she gets the final, she wins it. Because now she's won a tournament. And, you know, as she did a couple weeks back, I think it makes a difference. I think
and she looks like she's in, and she looks like she's in better shape as well.
Yeah, too. And psychologically it's different, yeah. You know. So, you know, once you get to the finish line and you're holding the trophy, the rest of it sort of goes away. She can do it. She knows she can do it. And really, it's, you know, we've been consistent all along. It's obvious, and it's tough to say out loud, but it's been her conditioning, and there's no excuse for it. Meaning, like, you know, she had a baby, so it's not easy, obviously, and we don't know as men, but I can't imagine it being easy to get back into shape after doing something that is really truly a miracle. You know, and it takes time, and tennis is tough, it's rough, you know, on top of being a young parent of a young child, and wanting to be involved with that child. It's not easy to sort of find the motivation, the consistency, and then on top of it to deal with the changing dynamics of your body. So yeah. it's been a process, and she's a champ, you know, through and through. She has always been, and I just can't think or bet or have any doubt about her. And so for me, Serena Williams in the top half here.
Yeah, I'm going to take Serena as well, too. I was going to maybe put her against Osaka in the semis, but Osaka is slated to play her in the quarters to make the semis. So we'll see how Osaka does with the pressure. So I would probably, I mean, it's, for me, it's, I mean, I, like, who do you go with? Do you go with, like, Kvitova, Keys, maybe, somebody like that, maybe an Alison Risk? I think something's going to happen with Barty. Maybe she loses maybe like fourth round or something like that. So I don't have a clear, you know, opponent for Serena. I'll go something maybe like a Madison Keys in the semis. But I'm going Serena Williams to make the finals. And then as we move to the bottom half, we have the likes of Bencic, as he had previously mentioned. We've got Dana Vecic. We have Maria Sharapova, who's got a tough out against Elisa Cornet, veteran French woman. And, you know, Parsa, you have to think, because I've heard that, you know, even Sharapova's agent has wanted her to retire from a lot of inside info that I've had, because, I mean, she's losing first round every week. Doesn't look good, right? And, you know, I know she trains hard. I know she loves it. And that is very commendable. And I'm not saying, well, look, you know what? She has the right to retire whenever she wants. And that's still absolutely true and hold, regardless of what she's done and, you know, the ban and everything that she's gone through. Still a great player. And I think this will probably be her last year if it goes to the same, you know, extent as last year did. And I don't think she gets past Cornet in the first round, to be quite honest with you. But we'll see how that unfolds. We have Sabalenka, Mertens, who's become very dangerous in the last couple of years. Danielle Collins, who's had previous success here. We have Halep, who's never anybody to be taken lightly. Then you got Svitolina, who's been playing some good ball. Amanda Anisimova, who signed that massive Nike deal, the Sharapova level, I think. She's like $100 million deal. So she just signed with Gatorade as well, too. So the money is just flowing in. And now, for this young American who, as we know, who recently lost her father a few months ago, all the promise in the world, does she stay hungry? She's got the game, she's got the looks, she's got the marketing, and everything is right there, right? Now, what is she able to deal with the pressure and the emotional stuff? I think she's ready to do it. So we'll see what happens. And then as we move to the bottom half, we got Kerber, who's a former winner here, Bertens, and then Carolina Pliskova. So I'll let you give people what you think, and then I'll give my picks as well too for this section.
Very good. I mean, I can't disagree with you in terms of what you were saying, and you know, Sharapova. Do we still have to talk about her, Nima? I mean, that's just a question. I don't know. I'm not into it. I'm not sure about the first 10 years when she was on Meladonium, and I'm definitely not into it now. I have a lot of respect for her. She seemed like a great competitor, but the stain is sort of permanent for me. I don't know how you feel about that, but, you know, this section here is pretty weak, not the section, the second half. I'm not loving it. There's a lot of sort of fake news type of players, that we don't, you know, we were excited about CeCe Bellis. All right, you know, she hasn't really done much. Heather Watson has made a name, a splash. Collins has made a name, a splash. There are these players, Muguruza, we can't trust. Tomjanovic, or however you say her last name, you know, she's best known for being with Nick Kyrgios. I mean, no offense. Anisimova, you know, super great competitor, but really hasn't broken through. Camilla Giorgi, you know, she's a tough competitor, but that's where it ends. Kerber was really good, you know, can pop in out of nowhere. Who knows what, you know, she's so hot and cold emotionally that God only knows where she's going to be. If she decides that she's going to train well and keep her emotions in check and learn how to finally serve, she could win the whole thing. It's tough to sort of tell, you know, with Taylor Townsend and Pegula. Pegula's playing very, very well. Coco Vandeweghe had been injured, and Pliskova, you know, we know all about Pliskova, the big serve, and the big hitting. And so I think this is a really wide open half. I think the one person I didn't mention is the one person that I think is probably going to go through, and that's Simona Halep.
I was going to say that.
You know,
as well.
I think it's probably going to be like a Mertens Halep semi, and only because those are the two most consistent in this bottom half of 64 here. So, I'm going to have Halep going to the final.
Yeah, I think. You know, I don't want to go with the same pick you had, but I'm going to go with Simona Halep facing Amanda Anisimova in the semis. And I'm going to be going with Halep to face Serena Williams. And then I think, It's tough. I mean, Serena's what lost four in a row of these finals since having a baby. So, and all in straight sets, I believe. And then Halep tuned her last year in the Wimbledon finals, which is very surprising on a grass court. Now, I heard that the grass last year was ultra slow, but that being said, I think that on this court, like you said, and she won that tournament leading in. I think Serena finally gets 24 here. And I mean, it's a testament to her that we're still talking about her. Like, that's, she's all, I mean, and part of the thing about it, right? Before winning, you know, that tournament last weekend, she hadn't won a tournament since 2017. So that's like a long, that's relatively a long time, right? So, and we were, she was still in the conversation every single draw preview that we did, right? When did we never say Serena Williams? And so it, that's just a testament to the great champion that she is, and to, frankly, the other players not really stepping up and being able to dominate the way that she has. So I think that I'm going to be going with Coco Gauff as my dark horse. I'm going with Serena Williams as my champion over Simona Halep in the finals. You got a dark horse before we get into the men's?
Dark horse-wise, you know, I look at somebody like Flipkins, you know, someone sort of random that really isn't there that can sort of do something. Okay. You know, it depends on where they are at, you know, and so it's very hard for us to tell what they've been doing. This is the hardest tournament, actually, because
yes,
we don't really know. You know, they could have been vacationing for 7 weeks, or they could have been doing Medvedev-style training for 7 weeks. I mean, you don't know. So, you know, that's sort of who I look there, and I'm looking for Serena also to hold number 24 here.
Okay. And as we move on now to the men's draw, we have, this is a couple of interesting things. Djokovic once again comes in as the overwhelming favorite, right? Played amazing at the ATP Cup. He beat Nadal. He beat Medvedev. Federer hasn't even played in a while. Nadal hasn't won here since 2009. Djokovic has pretty much won every year. You know, Federer's like 39. So there's like, is much going to change? And then we're coming in, and remember, last year in the finals, Djokovic even said in a recent interview that that was probably his most dominant Grand Slam final performance against Rafa. I mean, he took him to the absolute woodshed in that match. Even in that first game, if you remember, Paris, I still vividly remember, I mean, he's doing scissor kick backhand cross-court winners in the first game of the match. And you're like, okay, well, good luck here, Rafa, you know what I mean? And then that, so, and Rafa came in with like a house on fire, like beating everybody, right? Straight sets. He didn't lose a set. So Nadal comes in, Parsa, for me, with a pretty good draw. I think the only guy he's got to kind of worry about is Kyrgios, maybe in the fourth round. That's if Nick has the fitness to get there. You know he's going to be motivated. You know he's going to want to raise as much money as possible with his aces for the bushfires. That definitely, to me, motivates him. Because you know he's into that stuff, which is a great, great thing for him. You got to give him a lot of credit for
and
that.
And I love him for it, Nima. I went from you pick Kyrgios, I think every slam for like 4 years in a row, and like somehow now this guy has totally won me over. I want him to win it. Like that's what I want.
Yeah, and a lot of people do. And I mean, Parsa, you know, I've been talking about this guy for, well, just say this quickly. I've been talking about this guy for years, ever since he was winning challengers in Sarasota back in 2015, 16. And I was like, listen, this guy is going to do something, right? This guy's incredible. This guy, to me, had the type of talent that we look for in, like, reminiscent of the Nadals and Federers and Djokovic's, with that crazy serve and that awesome power and the touch and all that stuff. And then he kind of went down the wrong tracks. To me, his team is not that solid. They're kind of just like leeches, and they're guys who are just around just to be cool and party with this guy. And I mean, if he could get a team, a solid team like a Medvedev or a Dominic team or a Nadal, these type of players, then you're going to see this guy really be a perennial top five player. And I mean, if Burdich could be top 10 for that many years and do a lot of damage and still not win a slam, I mean, Kyrgios is much better than him in terms of talent and game. But Burdich put in the work, put his head down every day, and he was there. and he was top 10 for like 10 years, right? So that's really what it comes down to with Nick. I think he doesn't have a lot of adversity getting to Nadal, but it just really comes down to the focus, right? And his fitness. If he's fit enough, you know, he can do it. But otherwise, I think Nadal has a pretty good... I mean, he's got Khachanov lurking as well, too, who hasn't played really that well in the last 12 months, even though he's capable of definitely doing some damage. And then we have, you know, Felix, who's there, Fritz, who I think will win a couple of rounds. I said that Kevin Anderson's, you know, Kevin Anderson to me, Parse, is one of those guys who, you know, you go to work and you're at the same company for 30 years, and there's that one guy who comes in every day, puts his head down, gets his job done, it's pretty quiet, you know, doesn't have a lot of drama and fanfare around him, but, you know, he's not the coolest guy in the office, but, you know, he's respected by everybody. You know he's going to get the job done. You know he's super solid. And that, to me, is Kevin Anderson. And for me, I mean, I would not be shocked in the least if he makes the quarterfinals, even though he's been out of the mix for a while. That said, you know, team is there. He's got Mannarino in the first round. He's going to probably, you know, blow through him. He's got a really good record against the Frenchman. And then we got the likes of Medvedev and, I mean, who else do we have here in the top half? We have Medvedev, and then to end off with Zverev, who, I mean, let's just talk about him, Parsa, before you give me your pick for the top half. Alexander Zverev, to me, Parsa, I haven't seen a loss of confidence like I've seen in this guy in a long time, and I'll go to a much more diminutive player in Gamor Correa. And you remember when that 2004 French Open before Nadal took over and he lost to Gaudio in the finals. And he was up two sets to love, and then he forgot how to play tennis. And he couldn't hit a serve into court. Not that he ever had a big serve, but, you know, you just roll it in and get it going. But, I mean, I watched Zverev at the ATP Cup, just, you know, 10 double faults, 14 double faults. I mean, he lost to everybody, and he got worse as the tournament went on. What is going on with this guy? Like, why? Like, and I remember, and I'm saying this, Parsa, because I think you're the right guy to ask this, because I remember a couple of years ago when we were previewing Madrid, and you're like, nobody can return this guy's serve, and he's just on fire, right? And I was like, yeah, man, this, like, Parsa is like, he's preaching, man, he's saying the truth here, right? And then now the guy can't play tennis anymore. What the hell has happened to Alexander Zverev?
I actually know what happened to him, which is interesting. So I've had a couple of my students actually practice with him down in Saddlebrook.
Yes.
Former students, I should say. And they both were like, he's the biggest a-hole. You know, he's the worst person I've ever met. And he's so cocky. He's so arrogant. Like, he's just not a nice guy. And
yeah.
It comes back and gets you. And when you hear someone with an attitude like that, that means they think they're larger than life. And then the minute they realize that, oh, wow, I'm actually human and I have to actually put in the work and I should be humble, they lose all of that arrogance. And the arrogance, I always look at someone who's arrogant as they are insecure. And so he's telling himself that he's got to act or behave this way. And that's because he's got nothing behind him. So it's a lot of fluff, and so now he's got to hit rock bottom before he can start to work and be diligent. I mean, he's got the talent to do it, but you know, his game is suffering a little bit. He doesn't really hit the ball. He serves really well, but he doesn't have that confidence at all to be aggressive. So I think, you know, when you have the wrong attitude and you get a little too full of yourself, this is what happens.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think Correa was a good example in that you see someone from prominence fall. You know, his, I think, was from steroids, and he also was insecure. You know, he didn't believe that, you know, a lot of the Argentinians, actually. Cañas was similar. You know, these guys never came back to a decent level, and clearly they were induced by the drugs. But also mentally, they were, you know, aided by the drugs. So, I think Zverev is sort of getting what he deserves in terms of his attitude, and his attitude's got to change. And, you know, look at someone like Kyrgios, who's, you know, who has won me over as a human being. I don't like that he's not a consistent performer every day or any of those kinds of things. But as a human being when you see some guy who's like, I'm a partier, I'm this, I'm that, and then all he cares about is, you know, forget the brush fires for a second, because even before that, if you follow him on Instagram or any of the social media platforms, he's always advocating for people. Like, he is one for the people, and it's clear. And then now the Australian brush fire has put it into overdrive and put it into mainstream. But before that, he was always like that. And so you want, as a human, you want to get behind humans that are wanting to do good. And Zverev didn't have the right attitude, and he needs to go to rock bottom in order to have a, you know, one of those you best check yourself before you wreck yourself. There you go. He needed that moment, and he didn't get that moment. And you know, he's getting that moment now. And so, you know, they say that you see the true champion in the face of adversity. And so he's got to go down, I feel like, a little bit more. I don't think it's going to be a great year for him, but let's see how he responds the rest of his career. He's certainly got the talent and the ability in order to become a bona fide top five player. Yes. You know, but, you know, he already has, but, you know, meaning a consistent top five performer or even a top three performer. And he's got to put in the hard yards. He's got to have the tough conversation with himself.
Yeah, and I think that he's definitely got age on his side. He's only 22. I think with him as well, it was one of those things, like, he was kind of winning Masters events even, which is a very high tier of tournament, and he's beating Federer and Djokovic and Rafa. I mean, and so he was like, okay, well, I'm the man, right? Like you said. And he's like, it's only a matter of time now before it's my time. And I think that if you watched after the Laver Cup, he beat Federer. I think it was in Shanghai. And after he beat Federer, you know, at match point, he goes, yeah, this is my time. And he started, you know, looking into the camera and screaming at his box and stuff. I'm like, okay, buddy, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not, you're not there yet, dude. You know what I'm saying? And you had a worse year this year than you had last year. And I'll be completely honest with you. He comes in as a seventh seed here. I would not be shocked in the least if he loses to Marco Cecchinato in the first round. He's definitely the favorite, don't get me wrong, but I would not be surprised. I mean, Cecchinato is a former, you know, French Open semifinalist as well too, obviously best on clay, but I think that you know, he's definitely got what it takes. So Parsa, quickly let me know who you got in the top half here before we go into the bottom.
I mean, you know, some dangerous guys, you know, between Wawrinka and, you know, as you said, with Zverev, and obviously the two favorites, or maybe even three favorites, have to be Medvedev, Thiem, you know, and obviously Nadal, and Kyrgios. I mean, I want to pick Nadal because I don't know who to pick. I just have a feeling it's not going to be him. So because of that, I think I have to go with the other guy, and I think it's going to be Medvedev here going into the final.
Yeah, I'm going with Medvedev as well too. I think he's got the luck on his side right now, kind of, you know, well-earned luck. I mean, he's done the hard yards to get to that place, but I think that and again, Nadal hasn't won here since 2009. That's like two decades ago. So I think that's but I think he does okay. I think maybe he makes quarters, semi, something like that. So moving now to the bottom half before we wrap it up for this week, we got Berrettini as the eighth seed. We got Choric, who recently changed to Asics. We got Pella, who's a 22nd seed, which, I mean, is pretty surprising to me. We got Fognini against Riley Opelka again. Wouldn't be surprised if Opelka wins that match. Shapovalov, who has been playing some good ball as of late, he looks confident. Let's watch out for him, Parsa. Tommy Paul just made the finals, I believe, in Adelaide, losing there today. We got Federer, who comes in really with nothing on his side in terms of form. Plays Steve Johnson. You got to favor him in that match. And then we have the overwhelming favorite, I would say, for both of us, is Novak Djokovic. He starts off against Jean-Leonard Struff, the German. I think he breaks down his forehand, gets through that relatively easy, and then from there, doesn't have too crazy of a draw. I mean, Schwartzman is going to be an entertaining match, but I think he will get through that. And then Bautista Agut will make him play. But I think he can get through that no problem. So, I mean, for me, it's Djokovic all the way here. I really have no opinion on Federer. Not saying that he's going to lose first round or whatever, but he hasn't played, I think, since the tour finals, right? So I don't know what his form looks like. He's definitely going to be fresh. But for me, it's going to be a Djokovic-Medvedev final. And I think I'm going Djokovic four sets for the title. So what do you think?
I definitely am right there with you. I think it's going to be a Medvedev-Djokovic. I think it's going to be a classic. I'm going to go with a five-setter.
Yes, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, and what are they doing in Australia? Is it they play to a certain number, or have they not done anything with the fifth set?
That's a fantastic question. I don't want to lie to everybody out there. I don't really remember. I think it's not 12-all, right? That's Wimbledon. Yep. US Open is staying with the fifth set tiebreaker. French, I forget what the French, I don't know what these guys are doing. I think it's something like 10-all maybe. I don't know, it's 10-all. I'm not sure. Maybe somebody can throw us a bone out there and help us out, but I really don't know.
So,
but definitely, yeah, it's you're going with five anyways.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go something deep and... You know, oh, got it. Okay, in the final set in the Australian Open, a first to 10 tiebreak is played in the deciding set. So I'm going to go with a 7-6 in the fifth and 10. I'll go with an 11-9 in the super tiebreak. Djokovic to hold the title.
Wow. That's going to be one for the ages. And we know that Medvedev has what it takes to do that based on the fact of what he did at the US Open. So definitely looking forward to that. And that wraps up our first podcast of the new decade. I'd like to say a big shout out to Parsa. Thank you so much for your time, man. Really appreciate it. Thank you everybody out there for listening. Parsa and I will be back in about 2.5 weeks time to wrap up the Australian Open and then prepare ourselves for, you know, the Indian Wells Miami double in March. In the meantime, you can follow Parsa at ParsaSammy on Twitter as well as Instagram. You can follow myself on Twitter and Instagram at TennisConnect8 as well as on Mars. You can download this podcast on iTunes, Android. Make sure to follow all of our coverage.